so hype right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama, baby, ma. Anything's possible.
Rainy days back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. The crowd goes crazy. Most in-depth coverage on the daily. Mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings. Focus like Danny at the deadline. Global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line. Play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day. Trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast. Thank you for making this show part of your daily routine, whether you're listening to it through your headphones in a podcast form or watching it on YouTube. Thank you. I appreciate you for making this show part of your day. I'm John Corrales. I cover the Boston Celtics for Boston Sports Journal, and I've written a book called The Boston Celtics All-Time All-Stars. If you're watching on YouTube, it's the book directly behind my left shoulder. Now available wherever books are sold. Today, I'm going to have a conversation with another author, Jake Fisher, who has a new book out called Built to Lose, How the NBA's Tanking Era Changed the League Forever. It's a great conversation about the Hinkie era and tanking and the way teams are built, and then a look forward at how tanking is going to be different, how things are going to change moving forward with a lot more money coming into the league. So I'll get to that in a moment. I want to let you guys know about the live NBA draft show coming up on draft night, which I am hosting along with Chad Ford, with Raphael Barlow, Locked On NBA draft host. We all three are going to be covering this year's draft, starting an hour before the draft to past the second round. So for many, many hours on live TV, streaming live to your YouTube channel. If you follow Locked On NBA on the YouTubes, check it out. It starts at 7 p.m. July 29th. Again, I'm hosting with Chad Ford and Raphael Barlow to take you through the draft. Don't watch the other guys. You can watch us, and you get the local experts. It's brought to you by Built Bar. Make sure you're checking it out on July 29th. So Jake Fisher and I had this long conversation. Let's get right to it. I know what some of the answers are, but let's go through like what prompted you to write this book? What was the first impetus of being like, wow, Built to Lose is going to be a winner of an idea?
Well, thank you for calling it a winner. I think it's done okay. For the Boston centered audience we have here, I was in school at Northeastern from 2012 to 2016. Right in the throes of when Danny Ainge traded KG and Paul Pierce to Brooklyn to start, that whole rebuild in earnest. But also, I'm from Philadelphia, and I was covering the Sixers for Liberty Ballers, and that obviously was the same night that Sam Hinkie traded Jrue Holiday to New Orleans. And, looking at the league through that Philly and Boston lens that I was living it through, like when Philly came to the Celtics or the TD Garden during those early years of both, the early Brad Stevens Celtics and the process Sixers, like, that felt like a Super Bowl of losing, especially with the Atlantic Division history and the memories dating back to Dr. J and Larry Bird choking each other. Like, this, it was considered kind of like a competitive race. And I even got Mike Zarin on the phone at one point, and he told me, there were a lot of us hunting first round picks and kind of competing against each other to, get more future draft capital, if you will. And that's obviously kind of coded language for trading away your best players, getting a worse roster, and getting a higher lottery positioning to get the highest picks possible to draft the Jason Tatums and Jaylen Browns of the world. So being at the epicenter of that, eye of that hurricane, if you will, kind of, it was always in the back of my mind as I was, reporting around the league for the last 8 years.
So this whole book speaks to one of my primary objectives as a reporter and analyst, which is to treat these guys like human beings, right? Like if people can glean anything from the stuff that I talk about, that's how I want these guys treated. And in your book, it's very much the opposite. It's very much, this is a cattle call. These guys are, basically a series of numbers of heights and weights and wingspans and all of that stuff. how do you get away from that? Like, is this just how it is? Is this just how it's going to be? Like, this is such a transactional thing with the draft. Is this basically always just going to be one big, like, for lack of a better term, I think it's kind of like a livestock sale. Like, these guys aren't treated as human beings at all.
Yeah, I think, you know, the title, the full title of the book, right? How the Built to Lose, How the NBA is Tanking or Change the League Forever. You know, I think part of the Change the League Forever aspect, people ask me that question a lot. It's not just the lottery form. It's not just a play-in tournament, which definitely, you know, the lottery form absolutely was a response to what Hinkie and all these other teams were doing back then. And the play-in tournament, part of the calculus is not just to drum up excitement towards the end of the regular season. It's to try to quell teams away from tanking. But I think also the biggest ramification of this era was the streamlining of the conversation that, you know, we're having right now, that fans are having at a bar every night about asset collection and roster construction and salary cap restrictions. Like, now that that's been coming to the mainstream, it's definitely, you know, shifted our, you know, discourse about talking about these players as the contracts that executives do talk about them as. Like, when the Celtics traded Kemba Walker to OKC, I wrote this story for Sports Illustrated a couple of years ago, where, you know, when that trade call happens, it's someone from the Thunder and someone from the Celtics on the phone with the league office trading Kemba Walker's contract for Al Horford's contract and the other contracts involved in the picks. And it really is like that kind of a shrewd business on like the behind the scenes backdoor aspect of it. But it does bubble to the surface. You're right, with the draft, with, you know, there's a story where Jeff Green gets traded. I'm sure people remember, like, he literally found out he was in the pregame locker room. I think it was before a game at Memphis, before he got traded to Memphis, I believe. It comes with the territory with these guys getting paid millions of dollars. Like, Dwight Powell told me that when he was kind of chucked into that Rajon Rondo trade, if people remember, back to Dallas. Like, they were in the car. Kelly Olynyk and him were friends from Canada. They had a bunch of friends coming into town. They were driving over to Kelly's house, and some friends said, like, Dwight, you just got traded to Dallas with Rajon Rondo. He was like, no. Like, anything with Rondo, it's just been rumors and rumors and rumors. He goes, no. And then all of a sudden, Donnie Nelson from Dallas is calling Dwight to welcome him there. That was the third time he got traded before he even really played in his rookie career. So he told me, like, I get it. I understand you're part of the business. This is why you get paid all these dollars, to be able to pack up and move at the drop of a hat. But when it does come to the draft and you are analyzing these guys by numbers, and I know this is a super long answer, so I'm wrapping it up. When you are, you know, looking at these guys by their wingspan and their height and their weight, and, you know, trying to grade their mental aptitude, and you're interviewing their middle school nurse to see what they were like back then. Like, it does kind of get specimen like, for sure. And you know, I understand why teams go to that degree, because they're investing millions of dollars in these people, but it is kind of creepy at a certain degree. Yeah.
Back with more with Jake Fisher, who also covers the league for Bleacher Report, so make sure you're checking that out. First, I got to tell you about Rock Auto. You know, there's tons of different cars out there now. There are all sorts of makes and models. There's no way, no possible way, that local chain store is going to have everything for all of those cars. That means that either it's not going to be in stock, or you're going to get what little options they have. You don't want that. You want what you want for your car, so you want to go to rockauto.com. You're going to save yourself a ton of money. You'll spend 30 to 50 to even 100% more for the same parts at a chain store or a dealership. Don't bother. Don't waste your time or money going to that store and then telling that person behind the counter everything about your car that you can just enter into rockauto.com. And when you enter it, you'll get a full list and an easy to navigate site that will tell you what they have, that will show you all of the prices available, and you can make a smart decision for yourself. Doesn't matter how complicated, doesn't matter how simple. You need a part for your engine, do you need a new carpet? It's all available at rockauto.com. Save yourself time and money. Go to a family business that's been serving do-it-yourselfers for more than 20 years. When you go and you buy something, because I feel like you might buy something when you go, make sure you write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box That's how they know we sent you. It's an amazing selection, reliably low prices. All the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. Have you subscribed to the Locked On Celtics podcast yet? You can wherever podcasts exist, and you can follow us on Spotify. All right, let's start at the beginning here, because what I want to do, I want to talk about the impact, the future, because a lot of your interviews talk about like where we've been. I want to talk about where we're going, but we can't talk about that without at least the baseline. And it really all starts with Hinkie. Mm-hmm. Hinkie might be one of the most important figures in NBA history because of this extreme tanking. And now people compared like what Oklahoma City did this year and said, oh, that was much worse than what Hinkie did. But that, mm-hmm. I disagree because what Oklahoma City did was a basically a 1 year teardown, right? They just tore it down, and maybe this 1 year was worse than any one particular year in Hinkie's reign, but this is the 1 year where they did all this stuff and they've acquired all of it. And then now we'll see what they do. Like what they do next to me is what will determine if it's worse than Hinkie. What I think makes Hinkie much worse is that this is basically all he did for multiple years, and going in there and drafting injured guys. So like the upside of this injured guy, obviously Joel Embiid is the biggest one, is that you continue to be bad, so you can get more bites at that apple and you get more opportunities. So let's start with Hinkie. First of all, you can tell me whether you agree or disagree with my premise, but yeah. I think Hinkie's extreme tanking is what reshaped everything and got everybody to be like, okay, look, we'll buy trading Pierce and Garnett and like restocking and going from there, but you can't do what you're doing.
Yeah, it's interesting. I agree in a certain extent, being that the fact that they were so porous year after year after year, and it became such a national storyline, and that 15-16 season, the third season, Hinkie's final year in charge before he got pushed out, you know, as that team was getting closer and closer to being the worst team in league history, they were literally stealing headlines from the Warriors, who actually did become the best team ever. And that was really what the league and rival owners were upset about. They were, you know, complaining that this was a legitimate black eye on their product. And when that team came to New Orleans or Phoenix or wherever, a small market, that when their team isn't doing amazing, they're already struggling to sell tickets. You know, that mark coming up, the Sixers coming into the marquee that evening, is not something that's going to put more seats or more butts in those seats. And, you know, but I do want to say, I think that if Joel Embiid did not break his foot a second time 2 weeks before the 2015 draft, I think that 15-16 season would have taken a step towards contention. And I don't think they would have drafted Jahlil Okafor. I think it's evidenced by the fact that Brett Brown was adamant he signed a fourth year for his first year contract. I mean, Brad Stevens got a six-year deal to give you a sense of like the type of commitment that Boston, when they plucked him out of Butler, like Jay Larinaga told me this, because he interviewed for that Philly job, people might forget. Giving Brad that six-year contract right from the jump kind of just messaged to everybody around the league involved in the organization, like, this is our guy. No matter what happens, like, we're sticking by this guy. For Brett, you know, I heard that everyone, Jay Larinaga, other people, they were all wanting more than three-year deals. But Brett was the only one to get that fourth year because he was their choice, but also because, you know, there was, I think, a clear decision that third year was going to be, that 15-16 year was going to be when they first tried to make the playoffs, and they were going to splurge in 2016 free agency. Like Kevin Durant obviously was the big fish that summer, and, you know, it would have been maybe a little ludicrous that Philly signed him, but, you know, they hired guys like Chris Babcock, who had a relationship with KD from Texas, to be an assistant coach on that team. They hired Todd Wright, a strength and conditioning coach from Texas as well. They hired Billy Lange, a Villanova assistant who had ties with Kyle Lowry. Lloyd Pierce had connections with LeBron James, who was an assistant on that staff. So they were definitely making those subtle moves like the Nets and Knicks have done, you know, in years since, to try to like make olive branches to KD, if you will. And the other thing, you know, are we sure OKC is only a one-year tank? Like, and also, you know, sending Al Horford home for half the year. Same with Houston with John Wall and Orlando with even like Terrence Ross and Detroit just waving Blake Griffin. Like, Hinkie never did that. Like, Thad Young, I remember, you know, is such a darling of the book to me, being a guy who was just kind of, I mean, he literally said to me that he felt like he wasted a year of his career, but he just went out there and gave it his all anyway because he was trying to audition for all 29 other teams. Hinkie could have easily just sat Thad Young and said, we don't want you to get hurt, before he ended up getting traded that 2014 offseason. But he didn't. He played him. And I think, you know, the way OKC is trending right now, I mean, they moved Hamadou Diallo right before the deadline because they didn't want to pay him this summer. There's already rumors going around that Lou Gensdorf might be available, and there's even speculation about how committed they are to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander long term. So, and they've got all these picks, right? So I'm not so sure OKC is just going for a 1 year plunge to the bottom here.
Right. That's why I say we'll see. I don't know. I have a feeling OKC won't be quite as bad as Philly. But hey, look, that's why we go back and look back at things.
Yeah. And one other thought, actually, I just remembered. This will be quick. You know, one other thing is obviously this was a COVID riddled season, and there was not, for a big portion of the year, there weren't opportunities for owners and media and fans alike to complain about. There aren't fans going to the games here when OKC comes into town because there weren't any fans anyway. So I think that also played a nice little factor in all those teams that tanked this year, you know, to slide under the radar a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I also cover the Boston Celtics, who lost to the Oklahoma City Thunder. So maybe my perspective on that team is a little bit different. Yes. So you have a lot in your book about, you know, the Hinkie thing, the teardown, the lack of interpersonal relationships. So let's skip to that part of before we move forward, because I think we set the baseline of, all right, teams want to tank because they know that you got to get into the draft. All right. You got to try and find your next star in the draft, because trading for them, you know, you can try to trade for them, but there's no guarantee you're going to get that trade and blah, 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 blah. Now you've got front offices, like we said before, treating players like human beings. And that goes beyond like the level of respect you show them. It goes to a point of like the culture that you create. And why are there the same four or five teams that are consistently just can't build a winner? And that's the culture that create. And you talk about like the Sacramento Kings are like the famous example of just, everybody's out for their own, you know, it's a league, it's a team sport in this league, but I've heard you make this point before, so I'll let you make it.
I was gonna say, this is starting to sound familiar.
Yeah. This isn't the basketball. I've made this point a lot on the podcast. NBA basketball is different than any other level of basketball, and fans react to NBA basketball like it's college, like it's high school, but it's not.
Yeah, the sport is at the crux of the everyday operations in the NBA, right? But it's a business, and it's an ecosystem, and it's a marketplace. And you know, I talked to over 300 players, agents, coaches, executives for this book, and I talked to, you know, a lot of people every week, and that hasn't gone away. And I think it's only getting worse. I think the way the NBA is structured right now, it's, you know, these 30 organizations that all employ a bunch of different independent actors who all have their individual agendas. The players want to get better so they can get more playing time, so they can do better on the court, and they can get their next richer contract. And once they get paid, they want to put themselves in the best position to win so they can, you know, ascribe their legacy. Same thing with coaches. And executives are doing everything they can I have assistant coaches texting me almost every day asking, what have you heard about Orlando? What have you heard about Washington? What have you heard about New Orleans? Like, trying to get themselves hired somewhere. The head coaches are trying to coach for their job security. The executives are doing what they can to keep convincing the owner that they're the guy or gal to, you know, stay in that position of power and keep doing their job. So when all those conflicting agendas actually line up for a couple of months, that's typically when a team wins the title. And injuries play a factor or whatever. And all of that is why this tanking, this rebuilding concept is so much harder than it actually is on paper, right? You and I, John, we could easily tear down a roster. We could trade our best players away, get as many picks back as possible. Maybe not as well as other people, but you know, if you have any semblance of NBA valuation, like it's pretty easy to trade away your best players. From there, though, it's so challenging to build it back up. And when you mentioned situations like Sacramento, you know, they're really that's such a good example of when those conflicting agendas end up butting heads and prevent a franchise from having a collective total momentum. But it happens everywhere, and there's so many unforeseen variables that come into play, whether it be injuries, whether it be, you know, you draft a player like the Phoenix Suns, for example. When they traded Steve Nash to the Lakers in that sign and trade back in 2012, before that whole "this is going to be fun" Lakers cover, like Goran Dragic was communicated to him from Phoenix ownership, like, you're our Steve Nash heir apparent. Like, you're going to be the guy who's going to run the show here. Then Ryan McDonough comes in, he trades for Eric Bledsoe, and you know, they'd have a really good year, but Dragic doesn't make the All-Star team. He's looking around saying, he's seeing early Steph in Golden State and Dame in Portland and Chris Paul in the Clippers, and they're all All-Stars. And he's like, the only reason I'm on an All-Star is because you guys brought in Eric Bledsoe. And then the next year, they sign Isaiah Thomas in free agency. Like, then Goran Dragic requests a trade by that trade deadline. Like, all these factors come into play, and you know, they're variables that stand in front of you from actually moving from that zero, that bottoming out, that, you know, here we are coming into the draft with the third pick. Now this is supposed to be this inflection point when we move forward. There's so much that happens that prevent you from, you know, actually taking those next steps, which is why I think, you know, this book was something I wanted to write. Like, it really, I wanted to peel back the curtain and show the human elements that prevent these teams from getting to that finish line, if you will. That's supposed to be so easy, but it's really, really difficult.
We'll come back for a real look at the future of the NBA. Teams that tank in the future, are they going to have players under their control as long as the Celtics have Jason Tatum, or will they lose them after their rookie contracts? That's coming up next, after I tell you about Bet Online, which is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Whatever you want to bet on, American sports, international sports. We know that the NBA finals are about to wrap up, so you can bet on that still. Baseball, WNBA, Olympics. I'm sure there's Olympic betting there too. So check it out. Go sign up for free, create a username, create your password, and then enter the promo code Locked On. That will get you a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That promo code Locked On gets you a 50% welcome bonus. So whatever it is, $200 they make in that first deposit, you'll get a $100 welcome bonus. That's how it works. So don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get into the game at BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Please gamble responsibly. Be sure to follow our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. We're into the Ultimate Mock Draft right now. Make sure you're searching Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 to get the full network's mock draft. Our local hosts going through the first round, making every pick, making trades. There are trades to talk about this year. It's all week long. It's hosted by David Locke, and Chad Ford, Brian Scalabrini, Ryan McDonough are all analysts analyzing every pick, every move. So search for Ultimate Mock Draft on the new Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcast. Odyssey is your audio home for all sports, podcasts, music, and news that matter to you. That's AUDACY. Now, Jake and I finish our conversation about tanking in his book, Built to Lose. Now let's move. I want to move to the future here, because you've done a great job of building up this situation. And like you said, the book's like subhead is how the NBA's tanking era changed the league forever. Now we've got lottery reform, right? So you've got a new system, a new level of percentages. So we talked about OKC. They end up getting screwed after all of this, and they get what, the sixth overall pick? So we've got that as one element. Another element that I'm curious to get your take on is the money that is coming in, right? Part of why tanking was seen to work is you get control of guys for up to what, 9 years. You get the first 4 years of their contract. You make them the qualifying offer. You match whatever deal is out there, and you give them a 5-year max extension if they're worth it. It's the Jason Tatum thing. It's you got them, and this is how Jason Tatum is how it's supposed to go. Zion Williamson is exactly how New Orleans wanted this to go. Zion was the prize. They got him. But I think he is the beginning of an era where the qualifying offer might not be so prohibitive. Where, like, the qualifying offer usually, $4 or $5 million. They're like, oh, well, I'm not going to take that, because the flip side is, you know, $25, $30 million. Pretty soon, when the new TV money comes in, the qualifying offer is going to be like $18, $19, $20 million to some of these guys. Like, the qualifying offer is going to be huge. And even though they'll have the opportunity, like, it, and I'm talking a while down the road here, but not that far. These guys, when the new TV money comes in, these guys are going to be making $40 and $50 million a year. There's guys already making $40 million a year, but they're going to get—they're going to get that younger. Is tanking still going to work when the stars that you get look at their contracts and they say, "You know what? I'm going to play my 4 years here. Then I'm going to take that qualifying offer. I'll play the fifth year, but then I'm an unrestricted free agent." It's the restricted free agency that makes this entire tanking thing work. So you can control guys through their primes, or at least deep enough into their primes where you can, you have enough time to build a winner. But if you, if they're going to take their qualifying offers and be out in 5 years, then what's the point?
Yeah. I mean, the one pushback would be, well, the two pushbacks are, number one, no one has taken the qualifying offer yet in that degree. And you're right. But until they do, I think it's empty threat. I mean, even with Zion, like, he's gonna turn down $200 million. Like, sure, you know, we see it, we're gonna see it with Kawhi Leonard this summer, and we saw it with Kevin Durant in 2019, that teams are gonna, you know, willfully line up to give a guy a max contract even when he's hurt, if he's proven to be that caliber of player. But it's just a lot of money to turn down. And also, I think we're seeing it now, you know, we're obviously seeing it now with Dame in Portland. Donovan Mitchell, with the whole Dwayne Wade ownership stake, is definitely, it's been communicated to me, it's been rumored widely around the league that, like, a lot of that was partially to, you know, help create an environment that Donovan is happy in and he wants to stay in. I think the league is already at a point of no return where these executives and honestly entire franchises are doing whatever they can after they get the guy to keep the guy and make the guy happy and build a culture around the guy. And it might be for, you know, bad outcomes. Like, I don't know if that's the way to do it. I don't know if handing your keys to your $2 billion organization to 25 to 30 year old guys who, you know, by nature are super confident and competitive, and a lot of them super sensitive. Like, I don't know if that's the right way to go about this, but that's where we're at. And I don't think that anyone is going to be sacrificing that leverage chip so early in their career, because, you know, look at Victor Oladipo, right? He got his money, but he, you know, since then, tore that quad apart, hasn't been the same player since. He tried to exert some influence in Indiana, didn't happen. You know, Houston tried to take a shot on him. He wasn't the guy. Miami took a gamble on him, and he couldn't play. And now he's going to be probably taking, like, a biannual exception, better than a minimum somewhere, to go play for a competitive team this summer and put himself back in a winning environment to get that next contract. And I think until you get that first payday, I think that's how this thing goes. Once you get that first payday, then you can kind of flex your leverage and make your power plays. I don't think anyone's going to do it before they haven't already got that $200 million in the bank.
Yeah. See, this is where I find this whole thing to be super interesting, because at some point the money is going to get to be so much that second contract, that the beginning year, that first year of that second contract, like, it's not going to matter. You see Anthony Davis turn down the Supermax. You've seen other guys turn down the Supermax to go where they want. And, you know, they're turning down a lot of money. If now you've got the name, image likeness stuff that's happening in college, which I think
that's true,
is great. Now that's going to give them,
a great point.
You know, you've got these rookies coming in already with brands. You've got social media that's hitting at a level that's never been hit before. That increases brands. We talk about individual motivations.
That's a great point.
You know, these rookies are going to be coming in with all sorts of different elements. And I'm just curious as to how this is going to impact the league. My opinion is that at some point, maybe starting with Zion or maybe soon after that, and the reason I say Zion especially, not because he's just Zion, but that next year, that following year is when the new TV deal is going to kick in. And everybody's, you know, all the figures that I see is like triple this past TV deal. So we've got a collective bargaining agreement that's coming up in a couple of years that they're going to have to change. I think they have to scrap it and start over personally. there's so much money coming. They have to figure out how this cap smoothing is. Are they going to do cap smoothing? Are they not? If they don't, that's the year Jason Tatum's going to be able to opt out of his fifth year. That first year, if you're talking about triple.
So that's why you're paying attention to this.
very much. Yes, absolutely. Because Tatum is going to be that first in that first class of guys where, like, look, how many guys have you seen before this class, Tatum and Donovan Mitchell? I think, did Donovan Mitchell take the player option? Other guys taking player option.
Yeah.
This is not something that guys got on the second end of their on the end of their second contract, right? No one ever gave these guys player options in the fifth year. That was unheard of. Now all of a sudden, all these guys are getting player options. So that's the beginning of the erosion to me. And so if we're talking about triple the salary, then we're talking about or triple the revenue. By the time they split that, what's a max contract going to be like then? That's what I'm saying. I think when we talk about changing the league forever, one side effect has, you know, was changing the rules to break up these super teams, right? So we got the super teams broken up. We've got now rookies coming. And let me add this. I'm going to throw this at you. They're talking about the high school guys coming in a year early. So
it makes scouting a lot harder.
So you've got, now you're tanking and you're trying to figure out, you don't have that year of college to figure out where these guys have developed. Maybe they're going to Australia. Maybe they're getting pro reps there. Maybe they're going to the G League Ignite. But 1 year earlier means that that rookie contract ends 1 year earlier. And if you throw in the money, and if I'm right, or, you know, then you have at least the increased possibility of guys taking their qualifying offers. So you're tanking, you're losing, you're alienating your fans to get a guy who's younger, who by nature is going to be worse when he gets into the league.
Yeah.
By the time he gets anywhere near good, his contract's up.
Yeah.
And if the money is big enough where you take the qualifying offer and that's palatable, then tanking teams become farm systems.
Yeah, it's a great point. I think, you know, Atlanta, I guess, is the best model against this, right? Where, you know, take a step back. I consider the book kind of like a bunch of different case studies of the same idea, because they all kind of started from the same place. And also, you know, the 2014 draft, I haven't really mentioned that yet, was considered to be the best class since 2003 with all these LeBrons and and Carmelo Anthony's and Chris Bosh's and Dwayne Wade's. Like, that was what it was supposed to be. Wiggins was supposed to be LeBron, and Jabbar was supposed to be Melo, and Embiid's the guy, right? Like, he has been Hakeem 2.0, but there was also Julius Randle, and Marcus Smart was considered to be, you know, a future all-star type guy. I still have a bet with a Celtics fan friend that Marcus Smart will never make an all-star team. That's why all that was happening. But they all, the teams all started from different places, right? Like the Celtics had a contender. They had KG and Paul Pierce to move versus Philly moved on from Drew Holiday thinking he wasn't going to be good enough, which is kind of ironic where we're at today. Then you have, you know, Orlando is the superstar requesting out Dwight Howard, right? And Phoenix, same with Steve Nash and all that type of stuff. So I think you got to consider the context and where a team is and where their market is, and that, you know, if you are OKC or Orlando or even Philadelphia before they are where they are now, I mean, the Sixers never were, and even Boston to a certain extent, before they brought in Al and Gordon and traded for Kyrie, the Celtics were not really considered a free agent destination. So if this game, if this business, if competing for championships really is about having multiple all-stars, like all these people say, you know, I don't know what the better alternative is than to get them through the draft and to have that 5 years, even if it is only 5 years at a certain point. You know, you at least get 5 years to draft this guy, bring him in your building and say, you know, we're here for you. We're all about you. We're going to do whatever we can to build a winner around you. Like, I think that's a lot of these teams' best alternative, because the Lakers are in the book being that they didn't trade Kobe and refused to move on from Kobe when Boston moved on from KG and Paul Pierce. And the Lakers ended up being the worst team in the league from 2012 to 2017. Remember, they had three straight number two picks. And it wasn't intentional. They were not taking on purpose. Every single free agency, 2013, they lost Dwight. 2014, they thought they were going to get LeBron and Carmelo. 2015, they thought they were going to get LaMarcus. 2016, they didn't even get a meeting with Kevin Durant. Like, that's how bad it went. Mm-hmm. And I think, no matter what, though, the Lakers still just get LeBron in 2018 because they're the Lakers. And then Anthony Davis comes along and they're okay. If you're not that, if you're not Brooklyn, who, you know, credit to Sean Marks and his front office and what they've done to build that team into something that did make, you know, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, you know, interested. But also look at the Knicks. Like, the Knicks have been ridiculously bad for years. And now they've got $60 million and one type of, you know, somewhat successful season, and it seems like they're okay. And now that all these players are starting to talk about maybe going to New York, if you're not in those big markets, even with all the changing things, even with all the adverse, you know, situations that come with it, I still don't see a better alternative than to tank. If you're trying to win a title, I think getting all-stars or future all-stars at the top of the draft is the most direct way to lift yourself into contention for a lot of these franchises.
It's going to be really interesting. I think the only way they combat this is with rule changes, be honest with you. Like, they need to make the qualifying offer something different or change the structure of that, because I think you're right. I basically, this is kind of where I wanted to get to in the conversation, because we are on the verge of these teams, the OKCs and Sacramentos and the New Orleans, and, you know, with great fan bases, but small, mm-hmm. they don't play by the same rules, of having no choice but to say, we've got to bottom out, and the bottoming out suddenly it may not be good enough anymore. Like, that guy you get. Okay, so everybody's talking about Cade Cunningham and mm-hmm. this big transformational. Okay, that's great. But what happens when you're in a season where the draft isn't so good, mm-hmm. and you have to tank, and, you know, you're getting an Anthony Bennett? You know?
Well, yeah, I will say teams typically tank for those draft classes, right? Like I said, 14
is considered
to be the best class. And so three, and ironically, 2021 right now with Cade is considered to be the best class since 2014. And even dating back to 07, right? Like, the Celtics tanked to try to get Greg Oden because it was Greg Oden. And sure enough, they don't get that number one pick. And then Danny obviously turns that number five into Jeff Green, right? The whole Ray Allen deal. Yeah. So, I think tanking really does come into popularity, if you will, when it's for a class that has been hyped up for years on end.
No, that's true. That's a fair point. I think what Hinkie did. This, I feel like this is the Simpsons episode. Before we start today's sermon, what Hinkie did. But I think that is now such a unique chapter in NBA history. And you know, you're right. The Embiid foot injury changed the entire trajectory of that. But this also, we've seen trajectories change often because of injuries. And no plan, Oklahoma City, you go into this with a plan, and you can even throw the Al Horford example in there. Mm-hmm. Philly says, we'll give you a first round draft pick. Just please take Al Horford off our hands. And he says, sure, number one pick. Yeah, I mean, a first round pick, I'll take it. Yeah. And then you realize that Al Horford was just a horrible fit in Philly. He's still actually pretty good and can impact winning. And you say, whoa, we didn't want this. So we got to readjust. And you do something extreme like, hey, Al, why don't you not hurt yourself so you have trade value? And then this way we can trade you. And here comes Bob. So I don't know. I'm fascinated. Like, your book is a great look at everything that tanking has been, but I also view it as a great jumping off point for what tanking can be or will be, because this is the basis. This is the history of all of the decisions, and all the factors that I've already mentioned could change what these guys were doing. We react to what these guys have done.
Yeah.
And then now everything is changing. And when you say the tanking era changed the league forever, this is the beginning. This is the snowball rolling down the hill. So, I mean, I'm curious to see like what you think, like 5 years from now, you know, when the new TV money's in and there's a new collective bargaining agreement or new elements to the collective bargaining agreement, do you have any thought of how do you keep the small markets engaged in how do you keep them from having that 5 year? How do you keep the league competitive across the board, which is really, when we look at Adam Silver's priorities in all of these negotiations, it has been to make sure that there's parity. And I feel like we're edging towards, like, we've got some parity now. I feel like we're edging towards that going away.
Yeah.
Knowing what you know about how teams are built, do you think anything changes?
I think, you know, one good thing is that there's never been more talent in the NBA. I think we're seeing that now. I think the fact that, this finals is not exactly the finals that we were expecting. Obviously, injuries played a factor, but I think the talent is so widespread. And let's say Cade is this next type of guy. And let's say Zion continues to be the guy that he's projected to be, and so on and so forth. Fortunately, I think the NBA is in a position where hopefully there will be just too many talented guys that not all the biggest market, flashiest, glitziest teams can have, you know, all these guys. There's just going to be more opportunities elsewhere. But I think, you know, from what to really answer your question, I think I hear about the tax every day. When I'm on the phone with front office people, agents, whatever, they talk about, oh, well, will this team be willing to pay the tax? This team, you know, they're coming up to the tax. You know, they're probably going to make some moves to get under the tax. The league can do things to make the tax harder, so that way, you know, only a certain number of teams are really willing to pay that. And that will, in turn, dissuade a lot of ownership groups from wanting to stockpile so many guys. But also, I think there's only so many teams that really are willing to stomach, you know, handing over the reins to these superstars. Daryl Morey is the poster child for this. He's the guy who really, I think, fetishized the fact that, you know, get the All-Stars together later and we'll figure it out afterwards. Or get the All-Stars together now, we'll figure it out later. And I don't think that many franchises want to operate that way. I think a lot of executives, and we're seeing it now where front offices are exerting their influence on hiring coaching staff. But, like, I'm writing the story tomorrow about it's going to come out Tuesday about New Orleans. Like, in comparison, I mean, Ime Udoka, everyone's really highlighting how all of his assistant hires are these Portland connections. Like, that doesn't really happen anymore. These front offices want to meddle in kind of every single situation. And I don't know if a lot of these executives who, you know, we're talking about Sam Hinkie and Daryl Morey and Danny Ainge and Brad Stevens and Rob Hennigan and Ryan McDonough, like by name, right? Like they have a reputation and a legacy and a brand. Rob Pelinka, like Leon Rose, like they're in the storylines as much as these others are. And I don't know if all of them want to just stockpile roster with all-stars and attach their fate and their legacy and their job security to these mercurial, you know, billionaire 25-year-olds, you know? So I don't know if and then we see the Lakers, you know, get one injury and the Nets get a couple injuries and they're out. And they don't really have a shot at it versus the deeper teams, the teams that have been built more organically or holistically, if you will. You know, they're the ones sticking around and having the depth to withstand, you know, the grueling nature of what this postseason is. So I guess that's my long thought on, you know, I think the league will definitely do what they can to I think the player movement has been great for the 11-month news cycle and the fact that fans can get excited by photoshopping Dame into any jersey, and there is a legitimate chance he could. Like, I think that is good for the league, but also there's definite real conversations going on behind the scenes about the devaluing of the regular season and how those 82 games just don't mean as much anymore. I think a big factor of that is because we're so focused on the postseason and the rings culture and the legacy and the offseason movement that I think whatever does get changed in the CBA, I think there will be, whether it's tax stuff like I mentioned or you know, the length of contracts or whatnot, I think you know, the league is definitely going to try to stem down on player movement and try to keep these guys, you know, in a market where you can build these rivalries where Boston and Philly are going at it every single year or Miami and the Bucks. Like part of that, you know, I just met my girlfriend's friends at dinner, two of them, they're in town the other night and they're diehard Heat fans. And they're talking about how they're rooting for Phoenix because they're devastated about, you know, losing to Milwaukee after they beat them last year. Like I think the league benefits from having that type of familiarity and repetition to the themes, if you will. So I think that's kind of where it will head, and that's why the midseason tournament is going to become a thing eventually. It's just I think that seems to be inevitable. So those are kind of the answers off the top of my head for you.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. yeah, I'm sorry to put you on the spot with some of these things, but it's
all good, man.
This is part of the evolution of the game, and all of these elements that are in your book are great. Yeah. Because they set up this conversation, and like it's you don't know how to proceed until you kind of know what all of the elements have been before, and that's what this book does. It sets up all of the front office interactions, the way the league runs. I think fans are really going to be surprised at the level to which individuals will go to protect their own self-interest. And that's before we even get to the players.
Yeah.
Like you got a bunch of 18, 19, 20 year olds coming in and their motivation is, hey, I need to prove that I belong in this league.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, you got a GM that's like trying to save his job and maybe pick this guy because he was at the top of a mock draft and his scout said pick somebody else. But you know, you go with this guy because, hey, this is what everybody said. And if I do what everybody said, and it's not my fault if he fails. so it's a wild, interesting conversation. And I'm so fascinated what the next 3-4 years are going to bring in the league because it can reshape things. All right, Jake, really appreciate it. People can see on the screen on the YouTube channel, Built to Lose at Jake L. Fisher on Twitter. Find his work at Bleacher Report. Jake, appreciate you coming on for a bit.
Thank you, man. And if anyone was interested in the insight, it's available on Amazon, bookshop.org, my publisher, Triumph Books. And again, the 300 interviews, there's so many anecdotes and details, especially a lot of Celtic stuff in there that you're not going to find anywhere else, all originally reported and newly sourced. So appreciate you guys listening and would appreciate you guys copping a copy as well.
All right. Thanks to Jake Fisher. Again, follow him on Twitter. Follow his work at Bleacher Report. Pick up the book, Built to Lose, How the NBA's Tanking Era Changed the League Forever. It's on Amazon, and he just said told you wherever you can get it. It's a great read. Check it out, and buy my book while you're at it. if you want to get a couple of books, do that. I want to thank everybody for subscribing. If you've subscribed to the podcast, if you're watching on YouTube, thank you for subscribing to the YouTube channel. Leave your comments below the video. Let us know what you think. You can answer some of the questions I asked Jake. I'd love to get into the conversation there with you. I think there's a lot of different ways that this league can go. And I think this is just the beginning of the conversation. So thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. And of course, thanks for sharing the podcast and telling your friends that they should be listening to and watching the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.